You're so bad at telling your own story.
Well, you just said the intro. This isn't my story. You want me to tell?
Well, I would say, hook. Yeah, I would say I started a quilting company called Missouri Quilting.
Missouri Star Quilt Company.
Missouri Star Quilt Company.
It's a behemoth of a quilting company.
Can you say what the revenues are?
It's the biggest. Let's first start with that. It is the biggest.
It's let's see, we're 400 some employees, over 100 million in revenue. Like it's a big old boy.
We're live, by the way. This is it. This is the pod.
Okay.
How did you meet him?
Well, you got to keep the Hoobastank story in. That needs to be like one of our. Can you just? Did we get it? Or should we say it again? Yeah. Say it again. Funny.
The joke was when we started the hustle, we would, for some reason, I picked Hoobastank as the band that I liked. Like,
but you don't have to pick a band when you start a company. No. It's like, there's no form you got to fill out. Like, what's your band?
What's the tree? What's the flower? Exactly. What band are we?
Yeah. It was like our insider's joke. And we, in the email, we would be like, you know, like, this young kid who just raised a bunch of funding, like he's gonna be one of the greats, like Elon, like Steve Jobs, or Hoobastank, or you know, like
slipping in. Wait, would people notice? Would you get replies or like, what the crap are you talking about?
Every once in a while, so I put it on my LinkedIn. I put that I'm the webmaster of the HoobastankFanClub.com.
When you endorse a skill, it's like good at Hoobastanking.
Well, and when I wanted to like make a joke with someone, I would email them from sam@hoobastankfanclub.com.
You owned it.
I still have it.
Still have, keep renewing it. Yeah. Just in case.
That's $9 for a great joke that's still going.
Wait, so dude, you got to give your intro. Who are you? What do you? What would you say you do?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm Al Doan. What do I do? Not as much right now. I just shut down a software company. I'm the executive chairman of Creativity Inc., which is, you know, it's got a quilting company, a big quilting company, and a knitting company and an art company. A lot of stuff in that space.
Dude, you're so bad at telling your own story.
Well, you just said the intro. This isn't my story. You want me to tell?
Well, I would say. Hook. Yeah, I would say I started a quilting company called Missouri Quilting.
Missouri Star Quilt Company.
Missouri Star Quilt Company.
It's a behemoth of a quilting company.
Can you say what the revenues are?
It's the biggest. Let's first start with that. It is the biggest.
It's the biggest. Let's see, we're 400 some employees, over 100 million in revenue. Like it's a big old boy.
You own the largest quilting company in the world. It does over $100 million in revenue, and you also have now bought two towns.
It was so the quilting company in Hamilton, right? We bought the entire downtown district. So 27 buildings downtown.
Because you had to, or because that's awesome?
No, this was when we started this quilt company, the challenge is like there's 3,500 quilt companies in America, right? Like they're in every little city. And
you're saying that like we know that.
Yeah.
You're like, right, you know, 3,500.
You're with me, right? So 3,501 doesn't really pull the eyeballs in. And so I like, there's no ESPN for quilters, right? I can't just go advertise for this. And so I'm like, how are we going to get this? And so our, we were in this little town. We grew big enough online that we had like we couldn't fit all the inventory in our space or in our store. And because like we could either go open a warehouse, which would have been the normal same thing to do, or we're like, man, it's awesome because when people come to our town, there's normally no customers. And so like the impression you get if you walked in there, it was just retail, is like nobody's here and this is really sucky. And so instead we had like 12 people cutting and fulfilling fabrics. So you'd walk in and there's like this energy, this buzz that was happening in the shop. And so we split it out and bought the next building over and put fabric in there. And then I was like, man, who has the most quilt shops of any town in the world, right? Like that was like, it's the biggest wooden nickel in Minnesota. This was going to be my thing. And it was some town in Germany, I think I had four, and I was like, we're going to take it to these ladies.
You wanted to create a tourist destination.
Yeah.
You're for quilting.
Just be a novelty, right? It was just supposed to be a novelty. And so then we ended up
like Dollywood or whatever. It's like, that sort of thing.
So then like, if you're driving by on the highway, you're like, the most, are you kidding me? All right, let's go.
I gotta see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in that process, dude, we got like, people were coming to town. We only had like Subway and the gas station for food. So we started restaurants. We've got a sleep and sew where like it's a slumber party for ladies to come.
All right. So here's the deal. Things are changing fast in the tech world and the internet marketing world. And that's a big deal because you have to know which trends to stay on top of in order to market better, in order to acquire customers for cheap. And so you can run your business as efficiently as possible. Staying on top of all those trends is a pain in the butt, though. And so the folks at HubSpot have made this amazing report. It has a very official sounding name because it is a very official document. It's the 2024 State of Marketing Report. They've looked at millions, tens of millions of bits of data to find the top marketing trends that have the most immediate impact on your business. And so what HubSpot did was they surveyed over 1,400 marketing pros from across the world, and they looked at what are people using effectively, what's not working, more importantly, and they've been able to compile it in a really easy to read document. So if you want to learn ways how to optimize for social or how to boost engagement or how to strike the right balance between privacy but still being personal with your customers, go to HubSpot.com/stateofmarketing to get the free copy, or just Google HubSpot State of Marketing and it'll come up. Check it out.
So you're saying it right now, like it's like, you know, this is a natural thing to do. But like the first part of the idea, which is like, let's create the town with the most, let's create a tourist destination. Yeah. That's not what most companies do. So you have this idea from where, and then aren't people saying, yo, this is crazy. We don't have to do this. And you know,
do you and your family own the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're able to do crazy shit like this.
Well, we're bootstrapped, but like, dude, a fabric company is a hard thing to bootstrap because like fabric, you order your fabric 6 months before you get it. We're growing 200% a year. We got to hold the fabric for 9 months, recover your initial cost in the first 90 days, right? So that you can cover terms. And like, it's like a really complicated, we're betting the farm every 3 months. And like, if we're wrong, we go under.
So if you do 150 million in revenue, how much EBITDA can it do?
So we're like a normal e-commerce or like e-commerce business. So our goal is about 20%. We're not there yet, especially this year, right? But like, well, like that's where we'll end up.
But then you take the profits out and buy.
Yeah, I've made like seven nickels along. I pay myself a fine salary, but like all the money goes back in, right?
Next purchase order.
Well, because we're growing by significant amounts every year, most of that gets tied up in inventory.
In 2 years, what do you think you could sell the business for?
Well, our goal right now, man. Well, I think we can get 20% growth. For a couple of years, right? Which should move our valuation to like a 5x revenue.
So like $1 billion.
Yeah, that's the idea.
How many is it like your wife or your sister, or your mom? Who all is the shareholders? So like your whole family's going to get.
Yeah, so it's me and my sister, my buddy Dave are the main ones. And then like all of our family, just this year, we cut in like all of our employees that have been there for any kind of time. And that's a cool feeling.
But you started it with your mom, or your mom started it and you.
No,
tell me a little bit of the story.
So the idea, like me and my sister have been talking about starting a company for a while. I was like a year out of college, right? And so like I was, everybody's sort of an entrepreneur right out of college. That's what I'm gonna do. And we were sort of that same way. And my mom had taken a quilt to the quilt. You sew the top together and take it to a lady that's got a big $40,000 machine. And they're going to stitch all the backing and the fluffy stuff in the middle and the top. They're going to stitch it all together. And this lady was out a year. And she's like, oh, I made your sister a quilt. I took it in. I'll get it back in, 2008. And I'm like, nothing takes a year to do. Like, you can build a house in less time than it takes to get right. This quilt done. And so
either she's terrible or there's a lot of demand.
Well, by the way, that was literally my market research. I was like, there is going to be a market here for this. Are there others? She's like, yeah, everybody's backed up.
And when you say quilt, like literally just a blanket, right?
Shut up. Okay. How dare you?
Yeah.
It's a quilt.
It's what, just words?
Like, but I mean like quilt, like, cause I know some people like hang shit on their walls.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then some people have like a decorative quilt. And then some people, like, I had a quilt like comforter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly that. And like my mom's shtick, is she's like the McDonald's of quilting, right? Cause quilting, like most of these hobbies are very like, I don't know, like very defined, you know, there's a quilt police that's going to come and get you if the seams are off or whatever. Right? And if your points don't match, and I feel like getting into any hobby, there's that sentiment that you're like, I can't go to the group yet. I'm not good enough.
Right.
And so mom's like, finish is better than perfect. Well, and our big innovation, we made like the Lego blocks of quilting, right? So it's a pack of 5-inch squares and a pack of 10-inch squares, and you sew them together and cut them like this, and whack, it makes it this. And so like really simple tricks and techniques. She was a costumer when we were kids.
You're saying McDonald's because he like kind of made a process out of the burger making process where anybody can make this burger.
Well, no, I'm saying McDonald's because it's like not fancy, right? It's you're not spending a lot on it. It's like, you're trying to do it to get to it's serving the purpose of filling you with food.
Right.
I mean, it's funny because like quilting, I never thought that, quilt, My business buddies and stuff, they'll sort of laugh at like my whiteboard. It's like layer cakes up 17%, turnovers down, you know, jelly rolls. We got to get these back. You know, it's like it's all sort of, you know, goofy terms for people that aren't in the space. But like, man, it's a 45 to 70 year old demographic is the majority of my customers. And there are so few people building awesome experiences for them that like I feel like a lion among sheep being in there just like, we're going to build amazing, great experiences for these people.
And Sam's phrase for that is a dwarf amongst midgets. Is that your phrase?
Yeah. No, everybody normally says that, a dwarf amongst midgets. That's very clever.
It's not allowed anymore. But yeah. We're both Missourians. We probably grew up in somewhat similar environments. And that was a phrase. And I like that. And wait, like,
wait. It's the same people, right?
That's why it's hilarious.
Am I in on the joke? Understood it.
A dwarf among midgets. It's like a dwarf is like a tall midget. Look, like that's just a phrase. I didn't even realize it was like.
Don't cancel him. All right. Yeah,
I didn't realize it was bad.
No harm intended.
Another one is tough titty said the kitty, but the milk's still good. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, what do you think it's going to be like in 2 or 3 years if you ever sell? I mean, are you guys like you're going to be the richest person in like by hundreds of miles? What are you going to do? Just buy thousands of acres?
No, well.
I mean, what do you do?
That's a crazy question.
Because that's what he says.
This feels very aggressive, the way that you're phrasing this. I'm just going to say that right now. The idea is not to, like, I don't know if we'll sell it, right? But there's a big question in my head of like, I don't, my mainstay is like, I don't want my kid to grow up and say, I got to be a quilter because Pop was a quilter, right? It's like, oh, it's a business. You got to get in here.
The tale is as old as time.
Tough titties with the kitty and the milk and the goods. So I'm trying to figure out how to navigate around that. Like, how do you maximize value and create the most opportunity and all that kind of stuff? I'm very attracted to a finish line. Right, which an IPO or a sale or something would be, but also, you know, get to the point where it's shedding off EBITDA and it's a very easy one to just keep running.
12 years.
Yeah.
You didn't know, were you even like into quilting before that? Like, were you an enthusiast?
No, my mom makes me, she made me make one quilt. She's like, you can't run this company and not be a quilter. So I've made one. I'm making another right now. A nice bear paw on point.
So what did you know how to do? You didn't, you worked at, you were a software guy.
These are such mean questions. No,
the funny thing is at this event,
why are you
Sam's basically been having an intervention because he's asking questions that he thinks are completely normal questions and everybody here's been like,
wait, and women date you? That's so weird.
Yeah. And people are like, Sam, when you ask questions, it's like a full frontal attack. He's like, what do you mean? Well, he's like completely oblivious to the fact that these questions are outrageously aggressive. Well,
so like his mom is like the face of like their YouTube and he was explaining to me what she was like. And I looked up the YouTube. I'm like, oh, she looked exactly like I expected. Yeah. And he was like, what the hell? I was like, what? I expected her to be like a nice.
He's like, that was a compliment. I was like, very rarely is, oh, she looked exactly how I thought she would. Yeah. Made a compliment.
A lot of misunderstandings going on.
I was like, I thought she sounded like a lovely, nice woman.
Yeah.
And she was cool. And I was like, and she looks like it.
Sweet Dorothy Mantis.
But he also said that you own 200 acres and you like.
I do own. So I like this. But sort like, of
what
the
do you
issue.
Do in Missouri when you become this
I'm 100% hillbilly rich, right? Like give me $100 million tomorrow. My life doesn't change at all.
Right.
I've got a car that I like to drive. I've got a house that I like to live in. I got three beautiful boys and a wife. And beautiful wife also. I mean, beautiful extends to all of them. And like, I'm done, right? And so it's sort of a weird spot where I don't need the finish line. The only value that a finish line would offer is like pass the mantle, right? Like I no longer wake up and have to stress about like, what if we ruin it all tomorrow? What if the person that we hired to do this like screws it all up?
What were you good at? What skill, what attributes did you bring to the quilting table?
Great question.
Yeah.
Not a lot. I came out of college and my first job was with Symantec. Like I was a really good kind of networker, right? And not networker, but like I like people that I like and I hate people that I hate. And I like some guys that like,
you're the most popular guy in the house right now, by the way. I don't know if you know this.
For real?
There's like 25 people here. There's some famous people. Everybody's like big. Everyone's got a different nickname for you. It's like Big Al. Then somebody's like Big City because he's buying cities.
Oh, yeah.
And other guys like, oh, Al,
don't. Big City's good.
And so Big City's a cool name.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, It's like, you know, Tom.
Big city. Yeah, that man. It's
like,
good.
It's like calling like a really tall guy shorty or something. Yeah, you know, this is perfect.
It's better than big country. I get big country a lot, but big city.
No, it's not funny when you are.
Oh, you know? You'd have to be like tiny country or something like that. It'd have to be some opposite thing.
Yeah, no, big city's good.
Okay, thank
you. But anyways, you're super likable. I was calling out there, like, what did you go? You go, he's rich, he's smart, and he's funny. And I was like, yeah, you need to be the next Bachelor, dude. You know, like, this is amazing.
How did you meet him?
Well, I mean, I don't even know. No.
Patrick was on the podcast.
Patrick came on the pod. That was the first time I thought about the word quilt in like 12 years.
Well, he was telling my story, and all my buddies were like, dude, you were on this podcast, dude. You got to check this out. So I'm like, what the crap?
And then,
so
you DM'd,
and then I DM'd you, and I was like, oh man, that's my story. Like, if you want to hear it, I'm happy.
Patrick was like, Twitter? there's this niche market of quilting that's way bigger than people realize. And I was like, what? Really? We were like blown away. And then we were like, he's like, yeah, there's companies that are huge.
The conversation was great because you're like, oh, that's rad, man. Love to hear it sometime. Do you ball? Do you want to come?
Yeah, he DM'd me. Actually, I think I ghosted you for like a month. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, wait, by the way, yeah, I do want to talk about that. But more importantly, you want to meet up in person and play basketball?
But you didn't know anyone here, right?
No. No. Yeah, this is great.
Did you even know Patrick?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, I'd never met any of these guys.
You took an amazing leap of faith to show up.
Dude, and I turned out to be like 6'7" and love playing basketball. Yeah.
Dude, he kicked my ass on the court.
Yeah, he was amazing.
No, except you smoked us for the championship game, drained 3 threes in my face.
Yeah, I had like the greatest moment of my life today. So, you know, it's all good. So you do the quilting thing.
No, wait. My skills before this, just buddies that connected me up. So I was working in a software company, lost that job in dramatic fashion. I'd never been without a job at the time.
What does that mean? Like, I got fired?
Yeah, like me and 20,000 people got laid off in 2008, right? Yeah. And so I'm, you know, I'm like consulting and trying to like just.
How old were you?
I was 26.
In Missouri?
Yeah. Yeah. But I was like living in Boston at the time. They moved me out there and I was visiting my buddy up in Toronto. And then I moved in with him and his wife and their new baby, you, me, and Dupree style. And was like, we'll start a company up here. Let's do it. So we tried like three of them. We tried an ozone cleaning technology that we'd sell to real estate agents. And that was like a terrible time to sell to real estate agents. It was 2008. And we tried to do a little wealth management thing because he wanted to be a wealth management advisor. And so we tried to start that. And then, the quilt company we had already, and I wanted to do like a daily deal version. Cause at the time
Groupon was hot, right? Or no?
It was like woot.com and Steep and Cheap and
we just talked all about Woot.
And like Chain Love and all that stuff. Man, I loved those in college because they were great. And I'd wait up till midnight, which in Hawaii where I was going to school was like 7 o'clock, right? And I'd be like, wait to see what it
They're
is.
Still cool.
It's cool, but it hooked me as a college kid, and like every site was built for are you a dude that loves riding bikes? Get chainlove.com. And there's a new thing every night. But like nobody was building them for the 45 to 70 year old demo. And so when I did the Quilter's Daily Deal, I think it was literally the first time anybody had done a daily deal site for my demographic.
Which is like a discounted fabric.
Well, it was discounted items, right? Okay. And like, dude, at the beginning, it was so funny. Cause like I was the guy doing it all. We were just scrapping our way through it. So like, I'm not a good writer for my mom, right? Where like I'd write these stories and
they were always saying like, "Hey, ladies," like,
"Well, no, hey, fellow women."
No joke. So we started a forum, and the first 6 months of the forum, because nobody wants to join an empty forum, I was Jeannie B and Sarah Sue, and my buddy Dave was Carmen and Elizabeth, and we just have these like
chatting all day.
Oh, dude, we'd be, yes, what kind of quilt did you make? Oh, that's so cute. How's the brother? And eventually, now it's like 90,000 members, and like it's a great old thing.
Wow. So that's really but your mom must have had some following or something. Is that how it started?
No, she had zero following. No,
you started with the forum.
We launched. So the chronology. We launched with the website that I like sat and built. We launched with the store that we started. She was doing quilts. And then I built this website on oneandone.com. If you remember that old shared hosting, man, it was a disaster. They lost my site a couple times. It's like, I'll start over. Thanks, guys. And built this site. And it was a daily deal site that I would change at midnight. I didn't have any automation. And I would just like go in, you know, be on a date and be like, hold on a second. I got to log into my quilting website and change it up.
Tens of women are waiting for this.
Yeah. And we launched it. I still have the Facebook post in like February 2009. And it's like, hey, I made a quilt shop for my mom. Check it out. 2 likes, right? Like zero orders the first 3 weeks. But like every day I'm going in there writing these stories.
But you didn't give up.
Persevere.
Why? Just like.
Well, I mean, it was a marketing challenge at that point, right? Like we knew that we had a product that was interesting. Like we're selling fabric online, and like the other sites were like built on Yahoo stores and crap. And I'm like, I can like, this is a way better experience for this. And we're going to take better pictures. This is our novelty. We're going to sell it better. And so we kept working at it, just thinking we had to figure out how to find people. And our dude, like I would write these deals every day and be like they were always some version of the Pinocchio nightmare scene. I'm like, and then he turned into a donkey, and then he was in the whale's belly, and jumbo rickrack is $3.99. You know, it's like some weird thing. Cause I was just trying to be creative.
Well, that's how Woot did it too. They were pretty funny.
I was modeling after that and just trying to like be humorous. And turns out like my mom was like, this isn't good. You need to stop doing this.
This is weird.
My buddy Dave ended up doing it for the next while. And he was much better than I was. But so we went 3 weeks without a sale. Finally, my cousin Jennifer ordered something. And so, we're like, oh, that's all right. Thank you, Jen. That's very nice. And we'd get like an order or two a day. And one day we meant to price something at like $2.88. It was the Crazy Eights charm pack. We meant to price it at like $2.88, accidentally priced it at 88 cents. We sold like 11 of them. But shipping was $5, right? And so like our cost on it was four something. And so we're like, we still made money. Like this works. And the average order size was actually like $28. Like, dude, a loss leader. We should lose money on this in a meaningful way. And we can build this. And so it turned into like the deals are great deals. People love them. And, but that's what ended up building our business. And then as we went, like,
where were you getting the fabric and supplies from?
We buy them from vendors. So like even a day, there's probably 40 vendors that we buy from. And then to grow it, we started, making videos like the education stuff. YouTube was only a year and a half old at that point. And so like, you know, late 2008, early 2009. And, there's like this guy Quilton Buck on there, and it's like a webcam that he'd show on his quilt. And it was cool. People were trying to do stuff and nobody had like done it well. And so I bought like a Canon Digital Elf that was like the best resolution at the time, and just like held it in my hands and the manual zooming stuff. But like got mom to start doing these tutorials. And because I'm a 30-year-old bearded guy, I'm like, don't say your lingo, right? I need you to talk to me so I can understand. I'm not a dummy. I have no idea what a woof is, right?
Right.
A width of fabric. But like, I'm like, because normally teachers, when they try and start teaching, they'll try and like give themselves some validation by like, look, I know all the cool stuff, and I'm nerdy like you guys. And I just wouldn't let mom do that. So she had to speak in a way that anybody could understand. And we became this very approachable. If you've never made a quilt, you start with Missouri Star. And because we were making this content every week, we'd put it in our emails that we'd send out. And it was so like we'd lead with that. It was like, we made this great new tutorial for you with all these cool tricks and tips and stuff. And we'd ended up with like a 70% open rate on our promo emails, which is just the magic that we built around.
And you're 12 years in, yeah, like 100, 150 or something like that revenue. What were the first 5 years, do you think?
First year was $100,000. Then we did $1 million. Then we did four. Then we did eight. And then we did 14.
And then it kept growing at that rate.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, man, like bootstrapped through that was intense. It was
crazy. What point were you able to pay yourself and make money?
So we paid mom after 3 years, right? Like it's crazy. Cause I have like seven siblings in my family, and five of them work on the quilt company. Like we couldn't have done it if they couldn't have just like worked for free for the beginning. And like, I mean, it's like volunteers, right?
I'm well,
like,
what year was it making enough money where you're like, fuck it, let's buy a town. You know, let's
well,
do this.
Well, so 4 years in, we bought our second building, right? Or 3 years in, we bought our second building. And like, we remodeled it all ourselves. We did all the work. And then we bought, you know, we piecemealed the beginning one. Like it's, we can look back on it now and be like, oh yeah, well, we got everything. This is great. We did a good job. But like, that was never the intent in the beginning. My thought was that like people would see that we were bringing more people to town, and they'd start these other businesses and do stuff. And by the time, like, because we were running so far ahead of our own curve, we just ended up with like our whole downtown. And now we have like there's a few other businesses in town, but
is there like, because what normally happens if you start to like buy everything in a town, like there's always like one or two people who are like, I'm going to hold out. And we're like, you know, negotiate, like, yeah, because you need it. You need to complete the set. Yeah,
but then Tiny comes knocking on their door. We need to talk. No,
I cannot promise you protection.
Did you guys run into that at all?
Like the average price for a building in a small Missouri town like that was like about $20,000. And by our last building was about 80, right? So we, I just bought this other town down the road from us, Kingston, right? And so like seven,
Kingston, Missouri.
Yeah. So 7 miles down the road, it's our county seat.
Like with the really nice, like King, like they have a huge, is that on the way to Mizzou from St. Louis?
No.
Oh, I'm thinking of Kingsland.
Yeah. 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 No, Kingston is up by me and the other side by Kansas City. It was 7 miles from our town. And so we bought, it's, I think it's 8 buildings and it's like, it'll be like 70,000 for all of them. Right.
Wow.
And so they're just these old, like condemned sort of overrun buildings. We'll put 2 million into them to get them fixed up. Right. But like the real estate is cheap and the fact that it's already there and we're just kind of fixing what's there is great.
I mean, I lived in St. Louis, which is way bigger than where you're from, but even
it's not a competition.
But even St. Louis, I felt like, oh fuck, no one gets me. I feel like a freak here because I'm building this internet shit. And so that's why I left and I moved to eventually San Francisco. And there's a reason why like a lot of companies are started in San Francisco or New York or Chicago or Austin, like these like bigger cities, because you meet people and you like spread ideas and you like are inspired by one another, whatever. And it like rubs off on each other. Other than the internet, which is, I mean, where were you learning how to do all this stuff? And did you ever feel like, what the hell, man? I need to get out of here.
I can't find this client info.
Have you heard of HubSpot? HubSpot is a CRM platform, so it shares its data across every application. Every team can stay aligned. No out-of-sync spreadsheets or dueling databases. HubSpot, grow better.
So after college, I actually left this part out. This is a cool part. After college, when I lost my job, this was, 2009, I declared my year of the MBA, right? I was looking at like going back to Harvard. I'd lived in Boston. It was like, I should really go spend, and it was like $200,000 to get an MBA there. And I was like, man, that's too much money for this broke farmer. And so I declared the year of my MBA. I emailed all the guys who were like successful in business and were like, what are the 3 books that you'd recommend I read? And I got like a constrained list of like 37 books, right? And so I bought them all on Amazon for like $200. And then I had a bunch of buddies that were like doing cool stuff that I wanted to try. Like a guy was doing import export out in Hawaii and another dude was doing like venture capital in Salt Lake. And so I was just like, let me come work for free for you guys for like 3 months. I just want to, I'll shine your shoes and make your coffee. I just want to see how you run your business. And so I hopped around to some of that. And then I got into, I got to be an intern in Techstars in 2010. Right. So like
which one? Colorado?
Boulder. Yeah. So it was only Boulder. It's Boulder in Seattle. But like it was David Cohen and Nicole Gleros, 2010. And so like while I'm building this quilt company on the side, we've got these like world class mentors coming and like they'd mentor these companies doing, you know, cool robots. And so
you're listening to all these office hours.
Yeah. Dick Costello, that's super interesting. What would you do if you had a quilt company, man? I'm just curious. Like, how would you move this?
How would you like a deal daily? You like deals, right?
Does that do anything? Well, yeah. Okay, great. So like I was getting like this way.
I noticed you reached for your phone when I said that. Are you trying to tell somebody about this?
Talk to me about what are you feeling right now? Yeah, no. And so I was getting this way outsized like brain for the internet stuff. And I always thought that I would do something like I thought it was going to work for Microsoft or Facebook or something. Right. And in the end, like I just took all the learnings that I had from this and my desire to sort of be an internet tech entrepreneur. And shoveled all that into this quilting company, which is, you know, again, like it's very technology focused, way early adopters on a lot of stuff. And like, it's given us a huge advantage as we built this stuff. Cause there's no other, like, dude, there's no kids coming out of their MBA school trying to take my margins saying that's the, except for but Patrick. Once Patrick told all your listeners, it really screwed me over.
Do you have peers and how are you? Do you have like peers in the internet world or e-com world who you're like, you're chatting with on a regular basis to be inspired by or learn from or share ideas?
Like I got buddies, right? Like I'm an angel investor. I'm in 50 companies doing stuff. I have a early stage fund that I run with some buddies. Like I'm still like, these are still friends. We still talk, but there's like from an e-commerce standpoint, honestly, man, like I think I'm world-class. I think I'm one of the best brains at selling stuff on the internet. And
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
Also the MBA, the like give myself an MBA thing, the way you approach that, that's like, that is so smart. But also once you hear that story, you're like, of course this person's going to be successful as a hustler, right? Cause you basically do the math. You're like, okay, what do I want? What's the normal way to get there? Oh, this like kind of long 2 year, really expensive way. Can I just get that? Well, like,
dude, that was my reason.
9 months for $250. And you're like, oh yeah. What if I just emailed all the smart people, asked them, what are the best 3 books? I read all those books. And then I like go shadow, you know, the three smartest people.
You work for free for a dude for like 3 months, like Cohen and Glaros, these guys, they'll still go to bat to me for me to this day.
Right.
Because that 3 month investment that I made of like, and dude, I was the first one in, the last one out. Like I knew I wasn't getting paid, but like I was trying to soak it all up. And you do that and like they'll open every door you ever need to get through.
What was the most game changing book of all those that you read?
Honestly, dude, it's this book that's out of print. I didn't read any business books that changed my life. Right. Like once you get through like six or seven, I quit reading them because I'm like, it's the exact same thing. The principles for business are the exact same, just told in a different parable every time. And whatever your parable is, that's what you glom onto and say, oh man, it's good to great. That's the best one. This one, it's your Bible. But for me, like the most impactful was this one called Coming Out of the Ice by Victor Herman, which is this, this dude that like, went over to Russia and like ended up being an amazing Olympian athlete, but like Russia wanted to take credit for it. And he was like, no, I'm American. So they throw him in jail for like 50 years. And it's this crazy story that I'm like, this guy's an American hero. Somebody should know this story. But it's dude, reading that while I felt like my life was so hard was like, oh no, I'll be fine.
I do the exact same thing. I'll read
it's like better than therapy.
Yeah, for sure.
You want the fast version of therapy?
It's like it's David Goggins back in the day.
Totally. Like I'll read like a book about Navy SEALs or about like, I just read about the Cherokee Native Americans.
Oh man, your problems are so small.
I'm such a punk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I do the exact same thing. It's way better than business books.
No, it's like my favorite one out of that whole list because just a buddy of mine was like, oh, this is the best book I've ever read. Read this. And I was like, all right, I'm in, man. And that one still to this day is like great. But like, dude, the books, and this is my problem with college is like every marketing class I sat through or something, I'm like, oh, this is your great idea. You say, sell it for more than I bought it. Oh, you guys are clever. Right. Thanks. I'm glad I'm paying for this, right? And it's all these professors that used to be in the industry that you want to get into that no longer are, that might have connections that could open the door for you. And so when I was looking at an MBA, I was like, what if I just go to the people that are in the industry right now and somehow network with them? Like, that's going to open way more doors for me.
How many
did great?
How many people do you have? 450 employees, but how many of them are doing like white collar jobs, like SEO
knowledge work,
or like internet related things.
Maybe 100 of them.
100 of them. Yeah. How many of them live in the town?
I don't know. I'd say
how many of them are on site in Missouri?
I think we have like 40 remote, like fully remote. Like our engineering team is remote. Like
where are they?
The like all over from Seattle to Serbia, right? And then we have. Then we have like our design team is mostly remote. Like a lot of the ones that make sense to be remote are remote. But then like in town, I don't know, there's probably 250 of them that are like right there in town.
Is buying a town with good business besides like you have a business and this is kind of like adjacent, helpful. Well, if I didn't have that, but if I was like, oh, there's this kind of like abandoned-ish town, really cheap real estate. I can buy it up. I can reinvigorate. Like, is that a good idea or no?
Well, like I think every company should have a town.
Well, like they did.
Wow.
Like,
hot take, dude. Yeah. That's a really hot take.
You know, so we can list a few. Henry Ford tried doing this in.
Pella Windows is up in Iowa. They have their own town. Like there's
Bethlehem, PA.
A lot of them did, and a lot of towns were built around like that big
or like
company,
a coal
right?
mine or something like that.
But my thing is like every dumb internet brand should have one, right? Like a buddy of mine does. This is my thought pattern here is like if you're a 10-year-old girl and super into baking, where in America do I have to take you? Nowhere. Right. But somebody, if they
could just take that opportunity,
they're grabbing, they're like, and we're going to have Dutch ovens in this store, just going and cooking stuff. And then the KitchenAid mixer, you come and have the experience. You're going to come and spend 2 weeks here, try everything they've got. And you're going to learn how to make all this cool stuff and then go home. And your mom's going to be stoked to spend $3,000 to give you the experience because it's magic. Right. And the whole town is built around.
And that's what you're doing for quilting.
That's what we're doing for quilting. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Are people doing this for everything? Like if I wanted to go learn cooking, people are like, oh, I need to go to Paris to get that experience. But like, if I'm into like cooking or design,
what's funny, like let's say it's cooking, right? And you go to Paris and you take a class, but it's like, you have not gone to the cooking Mecca.
Yeah.
Right. The cooking Mecca looks like we bought every building on this street and walk in this one. We have all the cake decorating stuff in here. And then we've got all the baking stuff in here. And then we got all
the stuff. So you'll give tours. Or I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, no, you sell the stuff. You're a retailer, right?
Yeah.
And like tours are part of it. Like people, because when I go there, I'm all of a sudden a part of the community, right? It's like if you go to a Comic-Con.
Right. It's like you go to a brewery, you could buy the stuff or a winery. It's like Napa is a good example of this.
Sure.
Like wine, it's like Napa.
When if you're a consumer of it, yeah, right. And it'd be cool to go and take the wine tour and do the whole thing. If you're a beer maker, where in America do you have to go? Somebody should do it, right? I forget who I was talking to, but they're like, Patrick, right? He's from Wisconsin. I was like, it's crazy, man. If I want to get into cheese making, give me the town that like, it'll teach me. It has 20 stores and I buy the cloth and you have every kind of cloth and I'll buy the basket, every kind of basket. Like somebody's just going to take that branding and go build their town around it. And like, it's the biggest wooden nickel in Wisconsin now. And I got to go see it because it's novelty.
What is this example you're giving?
Wooden nickel in Minnesota.
You said that.
That's
like
some real country shit.
So in Iowa, dude, driving down, what is it? I-70. Iowa City has the biggest wooden nickel in Iowa. Or in the world.
What is a wood and nickel? What are you saying?
It's like a giant 16-foot buffalo nickel that's like...
Yeah, they even know what a buffalo nickel is.
So it's a buffalo nickel.
In the olden days...
Sorry, am I
before
the only one
that Washington
know this,
was on
do you
the
know
quarter...
What he's talking about?
Yeah, it's a buffalo nickel... A buffalo nickel is just a nickel that was made before, like...
I love that I'm looking at you like how do you not know buffalo
like
nickel?
Like 1905, what it was... Like,
I don't know when they stopped making it.
Any nickel made in the 1800s, I think it had a picture of a buffalo
on
it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it. The nickel used to have a buffalo.
So it's
Topeka has the biggest ball of twine, right? Like it's all just the roadside novelty. Come see the biggest whatever. The biggest pecan is in like Minnesota, I think, or something, right?
Gotcha.
And you're like, all right, I'm just going to get off this highway and go look at this stupid huge pecan, take a picture by it, and like then buy back.
So what are the economics? Let's say somebody does this. Like, what's a vertical where you're like, or like a category where you're like, somebody should definitely do it for, on a beer. Well, dude, or
so like we just had twins a couple of years ago, and I wanted like, where do we have to fly to if you're gonna have a baby and they have the coolest experience? You race the stroller around the track, and then you try 15 like different
baby
car
town
seats.
America.
Yeah, yeah. It should be in like Lehigh, Utah or something, right? Put it right with the Mormons.
Baby nickel you've ever seen.
but the novelty of they have 20 stores and you're going to go and spend a week there and come out with $8,000 worth of baby stuff is the draw, right? You're going to, all your shopping's done there. Every baby product's represented. Like that's the novelty of it. And the economics are going to vary by like interest to interest.
But where is the money made? Is it in the retail, the sales, or is it in the land appreciation because you now made a destination?
Yeah, is it just more? Is it just a retail business that has higher than normal volume?
No. I worry that I'm doing a bad job explaining this, and if I am, like, let's keep digging on it because it's great. But like,
we're just dumb.
So for an internet business, right? That, like our company, there's a bunch of no-name warehouses on the internet that sell fabric, right? But we are a little quilt shop in Hamilton, Missouri. In fact, we're a cool quilt shop with all this branding and all this cool stuff that we've done. And we'll never be the nameless, faceless warehouse, right? So if you're starting whatever goofy company you're doing, right? Like the second you open up a town. So one of the guys here, he's doing like Firebrand Tea, right?
Yeah. David Siegel.
And I'm like, bro, like go open up a retail store. Cause the second you do that, I'm not just buying from your crappy warehouse where you're importing
you
and trying
an
to e-com resell.
Lift because you're like, we're a real place.
It's a branding,
with a real
it's
sign
a branding play. Yeah.
And like people like this, you'll never come here. Even if you'll never come here. Cause 99% of your traffic never goes there. You're saying, That stands you out against every other e-com D2C brand.
And our split, like we get 90% of our revenue is online, 10% is in store, a little less than 10, like 8% is in store. But like our marketing is 98% the town. Let me tell you the story about Susie brought her quilt in. Oh, look at this new display we did. Oh, all this stuff, right? And that's the story that we tell. While most of our traffic or most of our revenue comes from online sales, right? And so that's why I'm saying. Like, dude, if you have a brand,
that's fascinating.
So many of these guys are just trying to flip Shopify stores and like, we import and it ships out of Ship Bob and it's great. And it's like, yeah, but like people know they're just getting like scammed by it. I mean, you're just buying to resell and try and make a profit. And the second you build a little bit of an experience around it, right? Like do the work to build the physical manifestation of your brand. It's the company all of a sudden is much, much more interesting in my mind.
Let's say you sell the company in 2 years, you're you or your family collectively are maybe a billion, worth a billion. You're not working with quilting anymore. What do you want to do? What, do you want to start another company? And what type of company? What do you want to do with your time and money?
I have no idea. I started a company I love called Pretzel this like 2 years ago. And it was the photo roll meets the credit card statement, right? So we itemized all of your transactions and show you this very beautiful, like, oh, here's all the stuff I bought. I thought it was super cool. And like the SKU level data aggregated around the user was so interesting to me. And couldn't finance it, ended up shutting it down. And so like that was my big play at it. And now I've got some major PTSD of like, I never want to raise money again. I felt, dude, once you take somebody else's money and like, don't give them a return. I'm like, I'm an investor. I know it's fine, but I felt so bad, dude. Yeah. So bad.
So what do you want to do then?
So now I'm just doing lemonade stand stuff, right? It's like my therapist says, she's like, I think you want to be Da Vinci. You want to like design a bridge and then a helicopter and then go paint a chapel. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's what I want to do. I just like, I'm going to do little lemonade stand style businesses, just like little things that can't scale.
Like what's an example? What do you mean by that?
Like I want to do a barbecue place. Right. Like, and I'm like, oh yeah, it'd be great. And I'll like have the meat, the pickle, and the sauce.
Right.
Like that'd be cool. And I could do the branding amazing. And as long as I was cool to like, let it die in 4 months, I think I'd really enjoy it. As soon as it turned into like, oh, now I built this thing, I got to grind this. It out. Yeah. Like I'd be miserable. And so I'll just try like little stuff like that. At some point I'll get into another thing, but like right now,
when you're in your early 20s and late teens, did you think you were going to be wealthy? And that
Dude, that's interesting. No, not at all. Right. And it's kind of jacks with your head a little bit. And like, I never dreamed in my wildest dreams that I would be where I am today. Right. And so like, I was talking to my wife a couple days ago. I was like, I think I might need, can we do a vision board? I've never dreamt of like what else is out there, what else I want to do with my life.
You like overshot what you had pictured. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You never repictured. Like,
sometimes you can overplan. I didn't expect this to work. And so landing here, I mean, it's a big thing in my head of like trying to navigate, like in a very serious way of like, I don't know when you remove the motivation of money, what do you do with the rest of your life? Cause so much of our world is built around like, gotta get money. In the same year, dude, I stepped back from my company. So the day-to-day work, I got married, I bought a house and we got pregnant with our first kid. And I was like every milestone I imagined I ever wanted to work for. And like, dude, when you're dating, it's a great reason to go to the gym. You're like, I got to look good. And all of a sudden I'm married and I'm like, screw it. You don't care how many pushups I can do. Like I'm not going anywhere. And it was like, it was a full on funky depression. Like not like a depression, like a lot of like grown up people have. It was like a baby depression for me, but like just figuring out what I was supposed to reach for was a really hard walk for me.
And where'd you like, what was the, how'd you get out of that?
I don't know. Well, so like doing
like any man, I just buried it inside and moved on. Yeah, you'll come back up later.
Dude, I leaned in heavy with the Reboot guys. I don't know if you know like Jerry Colonna over at Reboot.
He's like the big exec coach. Yeah. Coach, who do you call Steve Jobs, something like that? Who's he coaching?
I don't know. He's a Jerry nice Colonna. Man though, and I like him a lot.
He coached somebody famous, like you know, whoever.
Yeah,
they do like a retreat now for CEOs.
Yeah, well, so I like when I was running the company, dude. Well, because I was running the quilt company and it had grown to like 400 employees, and I was like 30, 32 or something. Like I didn't know what I was doing. And when you scale that fast and you don't scale your own capacity to lead, I found myself like I would sit down in a room and I was immediately like trying to make these other people feel stupid. So they wouldn't notice that I didn't know what I was doing, right? And you're throwing bombs in your own business. And you're like, dang it, Rick, I can't believe you did this thing. And then like afterwards, I'd be like, I'm not a yeller, Rick, baby. I'm so sorry. You know, that's not me. We're on the same team. And like I came out of that. I was like, man, I'm hurting the people around me. I got to fix this. So I went on a boot camp retreat that they do. And like, I came out of that and I was like, I need to fire my co-founders. Which was one of three co-founders, and I came back and was like, I got to fire you guys. They're like, no, that's not going to happen. And we're like, oh, what should we do? So then we're like, oh, well, I'll step back and like, we can manage this transition. But like to get to that point where I could sort of say those words out loud, like, man, I can't keep doing this because it's a family business. And it's the town. Like I felt all that weight on me and I couldn't get out. And so went, did a lot of the therapy stuff. And at this point
you do psychedelics?
No, dude, I'm so intrigued by psychedelics, but like I'm Mormon, right? And so like the idea of doing
Mormon?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Oh, that guy. Yeah. You look just how I thought you would look.
No, you don't. You're the coolest Mormon I've ever met.
And you know Mormons here, so that's nice. Yeah. Thank you. You didn't have to say that. That was
there's one like in the room. No.
I think because the stance is very murky from the religious standpoint. So I'm like, I've got a bunch of mushrooms encapsulated in my medicine cabinet that I'm like, Dre, my wife, I'm like, Dre, someday I'm going to go walking on the land and I just don't know where I am yet, but I'm going to go over.
I've never done it. I'm completely sober, but I'm totally into it. I'm trying to convince my wife to do it.
Dude, my fear is like, I just don't want to be the one guy like, oh, he took it and then his brain snapped. And I'm like,
no, I don't think that will happen with you.
Thank you. I don't think it would either because I've got a good brain, but if it did, I'd be very sad.
Do you drink?
No, I don't drink. Never touched it.
Well, fuck. I always thought like because I don't drink either, but I'm like, if I freak out, I could just get super drunk and I'll be okay, you know? So you don't have that.
Wait, this playbook feels made up on the spot. Science backed?
Well, what is science?
Yeah.
No, I just thought like that's like my that's my parachute. Yeah. You know, that's my escape hatch.
I don't know at what point I'll feel okay with it, but like at some point I'm just like,
wait, so you bought it or you have it?
Yeah, no, a buddy of mine is very, he's like, I'm good at onboarding people into psychedelics. I got you. And I'm like, all right.
Have you ever done it?
No. And I meet those people and they're like, dude, it'll be so great. So controlled. But so safe. I'm just like.
He's emotionally stable though.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't need this. Like, I'm like, you know. I need to get sad first?
Interesting part is just like the guys are like, I have my greatest ideas in there. And I'm like, can I just want to see what some of those ideas would be.
Yeah.
I don't think I need the whole, like, I don't need the trip.
Using 12% of your brain right now.
Then you got like your barber that's like, I saw Jesus.
Yeah.
He was there, bro. And I'm like, that could be cool too. I mean, all right. I don't know.
Well, dude, this is awesome. You came here not knowing anyone. We got you on the pod. This is pretty sick. You're the most popular guy here. Did you enjoy meeting some of these people?
Oh, this is a blast.